Well, it looks like some of our folks have kind of bugged out for the weekend, huh? A few empty pews out there. But you know, today, this Sunday that's tucked in between these two great Christmas feasts of the octave of Christmas, it's called the Feast of the Holy Family. And so we need to talk a little bit today about family life. Now, I always feel like a disclaimer is necessary before we begin discussions like this, right? I don't know anyone here who keeps the commandments perfectly, right? I've got to kid with you again, though. I think you all are much holier than I am. I go to confession once a week, and you all don't need confession, apparently, because I just sit in that box and wait and wait. So I guess I'm talking to a bunch of saints. But all that said, all of us fall short in some way in terms of God's plan for us. So as we talk today about God's plan for the family, I think we're aware that not all of us have been able to live it perfectly. There are some here who have never been married but have had children outside of marriage. There are some here who were married but got divorced. There are any number of stories. Someone said to me, "Father, I tried to keep my marriage together, but my spouse was unwilling." Someone else might say, "Well, Father, you know, 30 years ago, I was away from the church, and I didn't know God, and since then, I've certainly come to know the Lord, and I do a lot of things differently than I did then." You know, so some of us have been places, and we've come a long way. Others of us have tried and struggled, and when it comes to family, some here are divorced, some here have never been married but have had children, and some here are not able to find a spouse. There's any number of places where we all are. So please understand that as I review God's plan with you, I do not mean any personal accusations. I speak to a general situation in our culture that has affected all of us differently, but also personally. But do not take, please, personally what I speak of generally, all right? Now, with all that in mind, God has a plan for marriage, for family. And right now, it's pretty clear in our culture that fewer and fewer people live in this way. And there are many social implications that come from it. And God's plan is not difficult to understand, intellectually difficult. Fundamentally, it's one man for one woman till death do them part, bearing fruit in their children who are raised up in the holy reverence of God. It doesn't get more complicated than that. But we live in a complicated setting today. And for a lot of reasons, many are struggling to find this and keep it. Now, with that in mind, let's review some, I think, modern misconceptions about marriage. And then let's look at some of God's plan. One, I think, modern misconception about marriage is that marriage is a place for two adults who are in love to come together and share their love. Now, that's lovely, by the way, but that isn't really the fundamental purpose of marriage. In fact, most of you know, if you've studied any history, that for most of human history, marriages were arranged. Only in the last 200-300 years have we made romantic love the kind of basis of marriage. Now, please don't misunderstand me. Romance is a beautiful thing, and it has its place. But the craggy heights of romantic love can only be sustained for so long. Marriage has to be based on something far more than just two people, quote, being in love. And the real purpose of marriage and why it has its structure is be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. God gives marriage its fundamental work when he says to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply. So that the raising of children is why marriage has the structure that it does. Now, we'll get back to that in a moment. Another mistaken notion, I think, about marriage is that marriage should just be wonderful. We have, again, very romantic and emotional conceptions of marriage. And again, I've told you this before, but many people think marriage should be ideal. And if there's any ordeal, they look for a new deal. And the problem is that people think marriage should be ideal. We have these very high ideals about marriage. It's an unusual thing in our culture where we become so cynical about just about everything. People still have sky-high notions of what a marriage ought to be. Wine and roses and beautiful candlelit dinners every night and, well, you know, I exaggerate, but just a little. And if the ideal isn't met, people become very resentful very quickly. Again, seeking an ideal, if there's any ordeal, people look for a new deal. And the problem is, they want their marriages to be ideal. Well, I got news for you. If you got married, you married a sinner. And you yourself are a sinner. And marriage, because it's life, is not going to be ideal. It's going to be what it actually is. Now, in other words, marriage is like life. Is life joyful? Yes. Is life filled with sorrows? Yes. And does life have a lot of boring plateaus? Yes. Welcome to life. Welcome to marriage. Or priesthood. You know, life has all these dimensions. It cannot simply be about one thing. We have to accept that in life there are pleasant things and unpleasant things. There are joyful things and sorrowful things. There are things that we love about other people and things that we wish were different. Now, I know that's not true about me. I mean, you think that I'm a perfect pastor, don't you? Okay. I appreciate that you are willing to take the bad with the good. And we have to often do this for one another, not just in marriage, but in so many relationships, right? There are things we love about each other and things that we wish were different. And so we, just trying to look at some of these modern notions of marriage, which are flawed. At least not absolutely flawed, but flawed because they take one thing and make it the only thing, right? And so marriage is fundamentally a work of God where he draws two people in love, and that the fruit of their love should be their children, raised up in holy reverence to him. Now let's look at a few scriptures, some of which we heard today, and let's maybe draw a few teachings about God's plan for marriage. First of all, God sets a father in honor over his children, and a mother's authority he confirms over her sons. One of the problems we have in families today is not simply a lot of marital distortions, but there is a huge problem in our culture with a lack of respect that is due for those who have lawful authority. Now, most of you who are my age or older remember that we threw a revolution in the 60s. You know, we all kind of grew our hair long and started smoking dope and, you know, hanging out, and there was a sexual revolution, there was the feminist, there were war protests, there was a lot of social turmoil at that time. I would say that the 60s, that tainted decade, solitary boast would be the civil rights movement. But the rest of it was kind of I don't want to be told what to do kind of revolution. And a lot of anger and hatred against authority. And people put bumper stickers, question authority. And we sort of threw an adolescent meltdown. And you know, we've not really quite recovered from it. And there's an attitude among kids today that they don't have to respect their parents, because that's all through our culture today. I've talked to you about this problem before, the sitcoms, some of the cartoons that kids watch, you know, all sorts of other music and other influences basically give this message. Adults are out of touch. They're stupid. They don't really know what's going on. And if you look at a typical sitcom, for example, the parents are kind of dopey, especially the father. If there's even a father in the picture, he is a total buffoon. I said a total buffoon. And he doesn't have any clue, and the kids are all wise, and they're in touch, and they know what's going on. Are you praying with me? This goes on in our culture. It's a lot. And where children are sort of raised up with this notion that adults have really nothing to offer you. They're old, they're out of touch, they're not hip, or whatever the latest word that the young people have, you know. I'm showing my age, right? Hip. Remember that word? Hip. All right. Sorry. Well, maybe one of you wise young people will give me the new word that's being used. All right. But listen, young people, and old folks as well, age does bring wisdom. And older folks in your life are to be respected, not because they're perfect. No one in this room is perfect. And God does not tell us to honor our father and mother because they are perfect. Rather, we are told to reverence those who are older than us. But in our culture, that's largely gone away. Now, some of you who are older remember a time when getting older was considered a good thing, and we talked about age and wisdom, and but now it's like nobody wants to admit their age. People are trying to get all kinds of plastic surgery to keep looking younger, and, you know, in many parts of the world to this day, the glory is to be older, to have a hoary crown of wisdom. That's called gray hair. And people even stand in other cultures when old people walk in the room. I said, old people. Oh, don't call me old, Father. I'm just older. When old people walk in the room, young people are expected to reverence them and stand up out of respect. You know, King Solomon, whenever Queen Bathsheba would come in, the king of Israel would bow to the queen mother and kiss her feet. Again, deep reverence for our elders is a biblical concept that we need to recapture. We need to help young people to realize that there's a wisdom that the elders have to hand on to us, even if they have not lived it perfectly, and even though they are not perfect. You know, I learned from my parents, not just from their strengths, but also from their struggles. My father always insisted that I respect my mother. He would never tolerate us talking back to our mother, and don't even think of talking back to him. I remember my father would have these expressions. He'd say, whenever I'd protest something, he'd say, "Charlie, duly noted. Now do what I told you to do." "But Dad," "duly noted." Or another one, "Charlie, I didn't say I wanted to discuss it. Go and do what I told you to do." Now again, there's a time for a father or a mother to explain and reason with their children. But listen, the problem in our families about authority isn't just that kids don't respect authority, but an awful lot of parents, because we're anxious about not being liked, don't use authority. And I'm just going to say, and I've told you this before, please, parents, grandparents, command your children. If you do not, someone else will. Maybe it's the gang leader. Maybe it's the boyfriend. Maybe it's going to be the police officer or the jail warden. But someone's going to command your kids if you don't. And again, in love, but clarity with charity, but be clear with your kids that you will not tolerate disrespect for you or any other elder in their life, like their teachers, or even a crazy old priest. So again, this text simply says this. This is God's plan for the family now. God sets a father in honor over his children. He says it in the commandments, honor your father and your mother. God sets a father in honor over his children, and a mother's authority he confirms over her sons. Young people need to be once again instructed, because our culture is not helping them to do this, that honor, reverence, and especially when they're young, obedience to lawful authority is essential. And God does this because otherwise there can be no teaching. If I do not respect my teacher, there can be no teaching. I must learn to respect in order to learn. And if I do not learn, I will make many foolish mistakes. Another text says here, may your wife, this was from the psalm today, May your wife be like a fruitful vine in the recesses of your home, your children like olive plants around your table. Brothers and sisters, this is not a curse. It is a blessing. It is a benediction. It is saying, may your children be numerous. Now, you see how we're setting God's plan aside? Now, again, a lot of you are older than I am, and you remember when family sizes were much bigger than today, right? Some of you who are old, maybe 20-some years older than I, say, you know, Father, I grew up in a family with 9, 10, 12 kids. You know, whoa. You know, in my time, in the early 60s, it was kind of common to have 4 or 5 kids in a family, right? My cousins had 9. That was normal, kind of considered normal. Now, like 1. And then we're done here. What? The Lord says to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply. He didn't just say replace yourself. He said multiply. This blessing, this is a blessing, not a curse. But you see how we've gotten out of touch with God's blessings. It says here that children are a blessing. May your wife be like a fruitful vine in the recesses of your home. Your children like olive plants. And olive plants in that culture grew like weeds, all right? they grow on the hood of a car, all right? Listen. Children are a blessing. We tend to think of them only as a burden today. We think of money. We think of cost. We think of so many things. But you know, that's very unbiblical. And if you really even look at it economically, if a population is decreasing, not increasing, the economy is shrinking, not growing. Jobs become scarcer. Resources become less available. And so it is that even if you look at the thing economically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But again, it's really what we value. And what the scripture is after here is to say the most valuable thing for any married couple is not their house or the granite countertops or the big screen TV. The most valuable thing is their children, the incredible gift of human life that God entrusts to them. We don't think like that today. And I'm simply putting this in front of you because I want you to understand we do not think biblically about these things. We are out of touch with what God has always taught. And until recently, we all wanted big families. Even when I was a kid in the 60s, you know, when someone was pregnant, a woman was pregnant, they would say, well, when is the blessed event? When is the blessed event? Or it's like, oh, how did that happen today? That's kind of the attitude. Okay. Something has happened to us here in our hearts. Our values have shifted. You see? Now, another text. Uh-oh, now I'm going to really get in trouble. Some of you are getting ready to throw me out the door. Wives, be subordinate to your husbands, as is proper in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and avoid any bitterness toward them. And goes on to once again say, children, obey your parents. Okay. Submission. I will just say this again. Here too, this is not politically correct. But I'm reading to you. If you have a problem with this text, you talk to God, because he said it, I didn't. But you know, in a way, I can almost hear God saying, you know, y'all been trying different models. How's that working for you? When you get through all those little experiments, come on back, I'll still be here. You know, maybe an image for you is that every body has a head. I have a body. See it? Right here. It's my body. And I got this thing up here. This governor up here. Every body has one head. Now, if I had 2 heads, I'd be a freak. If I had no head, I'd be dead. Every body has one head, and so that all the members can work together. Now, that's true not just with me as my body, but a parish needs a pastor, a country needs a president or a king. We ultimately all need in any organization or body a kind of a final decider in critical matters. And that's just the way God sets it up. Now, we've tried to say, well, there's not going to be any of this in our families, and away with all that, and how are we doing? How are we doing? How many marriages today have just become power struggles? just power struggles, because there is no headship recognized. Now again, this is not a headship of, I can do what I please, Edith, bring me another beer. This is a headship of love. Husbands are told immediately, love your wife. Take care of your wife. But there does need to be headship. And in some big decisions, where the family might be divided and there's some big decisions to be made, there has to be finally a final decider. Now, any husband who is a smart man will defer a lot to his wife's judgment. You know, I'm not a husband in the normal sense, but I do run a parish and I do depend on an awful lot of good ladies telling me what to do. And I'm a smart man. I know to say, oh, that sounds good to me. But at the end of the day, every family does need a final decider in those matters where there might be division and we just really need to come together. And Scripture gives that to the husband. And again, this is what God teaches. We want to say, oh, no. We don't want to talk about that. That's not popular today. Well, I'm not going to just tear out pages of the Bible and say that's not popular today. I need to tell you this is what God teaches. There's a lot of strife in families, a lot of power struggle because we don't have authority understood and we don't have a proper understanding of hierarchy and how things need to work. And there's what happens is when we throw God's plan away, we start fighting and things become unresolvable quickly. And so again, maybe God is saying to us today, you think this is outdated, I got you. When you tried all your fun little experiments, come on back, I'll still be here and I'll still be saying the same thing. Now again, husbands, be careful. This puts a lot of responsibility on you. This is not a lording it over. This is a leadership of love, of service, of care. But it is a leadership. And you have responsibilities if you're a husband. And you need to sometimes make decisions and be able to take the heat. We pastors have the same problem. I sometimes need to make decisions and be willing to take the heat. And an awful lot of us pastors are sometimes not willing to take the heat. And so we just defer and defer and just let things go on forever. And that is no way to run a parish, and it's no way to run a family. But I hope before I make decisions, I've listened to you in love. And if I do have to finally make a decision that I know will please some and not others, I'll be willing to take the heat. But I've listened in love. Another text says that simply this, Jesus was obedient. Jesus was obedient to them and advanced in age and wisdom and favor before God and man. I would simply say again to all of us, and I'm not just talking about the young kids here, but all of us who are adults and our parents are still living, I would simply say this. If Jesus could revere his parents, and he's God now, if Jesus could revere his parents, and when he was young, obey them, how can we do anything less? Young people are still under the age of majority and still living in your parents' house, there is an element of obedience. You will do what you are told, whether you like it or not. Jesus did what he was told. And he's God. Now, as we get older, obedience is less of a matter, but reverence, honor, and respect for our elders is something that is incumbent upon all of us. I'm in my 50s, but I look to some of you in your 70s, and your 80s, and your 90s. One of our parishioners just celebrated her 100th birthday. Miss Gordon up the street. Respect, honor, reverence, a listening ear. So all of us, we need to recover reverence, respect, obedience in certain situations, reverence for lawful authority, and a deep, profound understanding of the beauty of marriage, the good of children, and a magnificent understanding of what God is summoning us to, which is a gift, not an imposition. Now, with all that in mind, though, as I say, we are dealing today with a situation where much of this is not being lived culturally, individually, and so on. And I simply want to make this plea. When we who are adults do not listen to God and base our families on what God teaches us, it is the children who suffer. Another huge misunderstanding today is that marriage is about what adults want. No, marriage is about what is best for children. Marriage has the structure that it has because that is what is best for children. So let's review from Genesis chapter 2 what God teaches. He simply says, as he institutes marriage, God teaches this in Genesis 2. A man shall leave his father and mother and cling to his wife, and the two of them shall become one flesh. And what God has joined together, no one is to divide. And he said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. So let's look at, again, the basic elements. And why they make sense is because that's what's best for children. A man, first of all, leaves his father. Notice a man does that. I said a man, a man. Boys will be boys. Boys will play. Boys will run. Boys will be looking for sexual fulfillment. But men look for a wife. They look for a wife. And so it is that a man leaves his father and mother and goes in search of a wife. And finding her, he clings to her. Now that means stability. It means a lifelong commitment. That means a husband has to be able to say to his wife, honey, if you ever leave me, I'm going with you. Stick like glue. Now it takes work to do that, doesn't it?
Yes.
It takes working through conflicts. It takes working through difficulties. It means staying in the conversation when all you want to do is get the heck out of Dodge. And what I'm saying about men is not untrue for women as well. There are too many women today who don't want to be bothered with men. They want to run and play in two and just live the single life. That wasn't so true until recently in our culture, but it's kind of begun to shift, and an awful lot of younger women today don't want to be troubled with marriage and all that kind of stuff, and they just want to do career and run and play and do their things. Now, in a way, our whole culture has kind of gone on an extended bout of adolescence. Nobody wants to make commitments. Everybody wants to keep sampling and trying everything. Brothers and sisters, part of becoming an adult is saying, here is what I need to do with my life. Throw in your lot and start doing it. But too many people in our culture today just want to live unattached and without any commitments and just be free as a bird. And that is okay when you're a teenager. But there comes a time when we have to become adults. We have to take responsibility, do some things that are hard, and throw in our lot and just make decisions and continue with them and stay faithful to those commitments. And that is something we are not doing well in our culture today. Everyone should say, I need to please myself. I need to be true to myself. No, you need to be true to God. You need to find out who God has made you to be and start doing it. And if he's called you to marriage, then go look for a spouse and get with it. And if he's called you to priesthood or religious life, get with it. If there's some unique or powerful thing, get with it. But we just can't keep postponing and just live as though we were in college forever. Now, a man leaves his father and my mother, looks for a wife, and clings to her. And likewise, a woman. She finds her husband and clings to him. Now, again, brothers and sisters, there's tension in every marriage. There's tension. In some ways, people struggle with this because they think, well, I get along with my friends and all, and my husband and I fight, or my wife and I fight, and that's because marriage is about the stuff that really matters. You know, friends can get together, have a round of beers, debate politics, zone on each other, and call each other all kinds of names and order another round, right? You don't have to live with those people. But marriage is about stuff that matters. It's about children. It's about future. It's about land. It's about the stuff that's really significant in life. Yeah, there's going to be tension. There's always been tension in marriage. But there's no tension, no change. Tension isn't always bad. One of the things that spouses do for each other is to help complete each other. Just some things that just need to be completed. I stood before you a number of weeks ago and said, for you, I'm your pastor. With you, I'm your brother. But from you, I'm your son. And you have often held me in moments of tension and asked me to consider changing. There's been wonderful moments and tense moments, but in all of it, you've helped complete me to become more and more the man I'm supposed to be. And that's the nature of real relationships. Friendships you can get in and out of, but family, you got to stay there, and you got to be formed. And it isn't always what you want. Sometimes it's what you need. Hello. So again, a man leaves his father and mother, clings to his wife, and the two of them become one flesh. Now, why this structure? First of all, why a man and a woman? Well, that's what's necessary for children. Now, God, in order to, he said, I will find a suitable partner for Adam. A suitable partner. And in order to do this, he created Eve. He didn't create Eve and Ellen and Jane and Sue and Mary and Beth. No polygamy. One man, one woman. That's God's plan for marriage. Not only that, he created Eve, not Steve, and so the suitable partner in terms of marriage is going to be a person of the opposite sex. Now, there are some today who want same-sex attractions and so on, and all these types of things to be called marriage, but this is not God's plan. He does not say that in his word. And so it is that friendships, living celibately, this is what those with same-sex attraction are called to do. And friendships can be very beautiful. I live celibately. I'm a celibate man, and my life is beautiful and fulfilled, and I have wonderful friendships. And I have all you. It is not essential to have sex to be happy. I'm a witness. I'm telling you, 25 years a priest, I've never fallen, not even once. My life is happy and full. And there are just some who are not called to marriage. But you see, when we turn marriage into two people being happy, well then, we've mistaken what marriage is. Marriage is about two people coming together to have children. That's what marriage is. And that's why it has the structure that God gives it. So he creates a suitable partner. Her name is Eve. And this is why a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife. And the two of them become one flesh. And why their marriage should be stable is because that is what is best for children. I'm sorry, all this talk about easy divorce, it used to be hard in this country to get divorced. Now it's easy, and we've been suffering ever since. It should be hard to get divorced. Parents need to learn to stick it out for the sake of the kids and work through their differences. And so it is that we live in a culture of easy divorce, but that it should not be our approach as Christians. When you get married, there's going to be tension in your marriage because you married a sinner and you're a sinner. There's going to be tension because there's life and stuff that matters. Work through. Try to deal with it. Resolve them. The kids need this. God wants couples to cling together because that is what is best for children. Now, every child deserves to have a father and a mother, a male and a female parent who are with them throughout. They can depend on them. This is what's best for children. I learned things from my mother I could not have learned from my father, and from my father that I could not have learned from my mother. There is a genius to being human. There's a feminine genius and a masculine genius. And children need both. And they need parents to be stably present. They need to be able to depend on them. They need that complementary witness and testimony. That is what is best for children. And we ought not intentionally deprive children of this. But we do. And sadly, in our culture, everything's turned upside down because the happiness and the fulfillment of adults is more important than what's best for children. And instead of making sacrifices that we should make for our children, which is the normal, natural thing, that parents and adults make sacrifices for children, we often ask children to make sacrifices for us. We won't work it out. We won't work through it. We just go our separate ways. And some of the stuff that kids got to go through, one weekend with this parent and his new girlfriend, another weekend over here with mama, and Lord have mercy. The stuff that some kids have to go through. It is not right. And so God has a plan. He has a plan. One man for one woman till death do them part. It's not easy. It's hard. That's why we need grace. But that's also why we need a clear word from God. It's so easy to just do the simple things, the easy things. It's harder to do the hard things. And so God has to give us a clear plan and give us grace, and we need to fall on our knees and say, Lord, help. I don't know how I can keep this crazy marriage together. Help! You know, God's still in the miracle-working business. Yes, he is. And I've seen some marriages get snatched out of the fire. I have seen it with my own eyes. God can still work miracles. So stay in it if you're still in it. Now, I realize some people say, Father, can't unring the bell. That happened years ago. I understand. But let's all at least agree here that God has a plan. And even if you have not been able to live his plan for marriage and family perfectly, I hope, in fact, you could even be a better witness in a way to say, just do it God's way. Don't try anything else. Just do it God's way. This is going to render us into all kinds of trouble, socially, politically. None of this stuff is politically correct today. But brothers and sisters, it is God's plan. I have selected from you from the scriptures of God. I'm not making it up. And if you got a problem or you think there needs to be another way, you go talk to God about it, because he said these things. I did not. I agree with him. But at the end of the day, even if I don't, God's word must stand. And we're not going to do our culture any favors by caving or putting tape over our mouth because it's not popular to talk like this or somebody's feelings might get hurt. We got to talk. And if you haven't lived this perfectly, and none of us have, let's never deny our children the true teaching of God. And even if we have to say to them, I could not pull this off, but I want you to work hard, and I want you to be very, very careful to hear what God says about marriage and about family, and I want you to live it. All of us have this obligation because we're supposed to be prophets. And last time I checked, none of the prophets, except Jesus himself, was sinless, but they still said it. Thus saith the Lord. So, again, tough stuff today. Maybe one final little statistic just to both encourage and challenge us, and then I'll be done. In 1961, the year that I was born, 80% of black children were raised in a two-parent family. And people were alarmed that as high as 20% were not being raised with their father present. Already alarm bells were going off. Now the whole thing is turned upside down. 80% of black children are raised without their father present. Other parts of our community are all catching up. In fact, nationwide right now, more than 50% of children are not raised in a two-parent family. This is not healthy. But you know, it wasn't that long ago. I was born in 1961. I am 53 years old. It is not that long ago that we used to do this stuff. We used to get married and stay married. We got married first and we had children after that, and we stayed married, and most people did that not that long ago. We have not been in this disrepair for that long. We can still go back and find the strength to live God's plan. It is not some distant thing from a distant world. It's in my lifetime, and certainly in the lifetime of many of you, that we used to get this right. Our families were not perfect, far from perfect. But we got married, we worked through our differences, and we stayed married. And we handed on to our children a wisdom. We're not doing that well today, but it's not that long ago that we did better. Not perfectly, but we did better. We can still lay hold of this wisdom. And once again, shout out to all those. Walk in the light. Beautiful light. Oh, come where the dewdrops of mercy shine bright. Oh, shine all around us by day and by night. Jesus, the light of the world. This is his light for us. It's his plan, and it's not easy. It's hard. But with him, it becomes possible. And faith makes things possible, not easy. That walking in the light of faith makes this vision possible. Not easy, but possible. Amen.